I've got three sisters, and since my ABCs, they've been the milk in my honey and the sugar in my teas. These older, bolder beauties are like three Thelmas to my Louise, and each of them blessed with a pair of double Ds. So I don't know why it never happened for me. I was expecting it. I know I never signed up to be defective. My genetic imperative was the silhouette of a page three queen. By the time I hit 13, I was like, they might be small now, but wait till these babies kick in. Those girls in 7B won't look so smart when I've got two Himalayas rising up under my skin, and I will win every boy at school. Even the sporty ones. With my watermelons aimed at their Adam's apple, it will be like a sexy fruit salad. My shape will be the epitome of femininity, and the proximity of breast to belly will make my waist look slimmer and see. I know it might sound odd, but from those peaks on a sunny day, you might see God, because I'm going to be a double D. Just wait and see. But it didn't come. I was left wanting more. I need some help from Obi-Wan, because these aren't the boobs I was looking for. The birthright I was promised has turned up at the wrong door, and now some motherfuckers dressed in the breast that should have been mine by law. And sure, I know, it's not that important. I mean, I wouldn't take Wide Wangers over world peace, but if there's a way I could have both, that would be sweet. Because history has seen the defeat of Pol Pot, Hitler, Mussolini. Good. Next, I want to look good in a bikini. But since there's no genie in my district, and it's pretty unlikely Jim will fix it, I'll admit, at times in my life, I've considered going under the knife. But the strife I got from friends, lovers, and my brother's wife made me wait, let the idea percolate a bit. Because they were full of shit like, no, don't do it. Small breasts are great. They're so trendy. Yeah. But in the end, see, I've accepted my flesh, and I know I've more to offer than what's under my dress, so don't think I'm shallow. It's just a complex. And it's one that I felt I had to get off my chest, just milk that I need to express before we go any further. And I guess, I hope that now I've explained this, you'll know why I said I love you when you said nice tits.
Oh, thank you. That was Double D by Amy Aker, who's with us today.
Hello.
And that was Shiny and New, is that right?
That was new, yes. Yeah. Written last week.
Good. I don't know. So, to me that sounds like polished and sort of, it's sort of working. So like when you write, do you need to redraft a lot, or is it kind of pretty much there when you've done it?
No, I redraft, but I think normally if a poem's good, I tend to get most of it out in the first session.
Yeah.
Like, if I just write a little bit and come back to it, it's often not as strong. I think the good ones just kind of come out in a big sort of outpouring, and then you go back and sort it. And it's normally the end that needs the most work afterwards, I think. But this one, I was kind of making changes at the last minute. And then I went and did it yesterday at Poetry Cafe, and it was kind of... the first performance is always a bit stumbly, and then it's great when you know something quite well and it just kind of comes out like clockwork without you thinking about it.
So when you perform, say like last night, are you sort of listening to yourself, or are you kind of gauging the listeners themselves? Can you tell how they're sort of reacting? Or
I think, yeah, I mean, you get a feel, but I mean, as a rule, poetry audiences I think are quite nice and quite polite, so they kind of, they'll always be quite appreciative whatever you do. But I think I mean, for me, it's just the performance gets so much better the more you know the poem. So I've got some old ones that I can do, and I can get really into the performance, and I can see how people are judging it, and I can kind of, you know, mess around with it a bit and just have fun. But if something's new, then a lot of my energy goes into remembering the words.
I actually have quite a good question.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, I assume you prefer to sort of memorise it.
I do, yeah.
Perform it that way, which I really like it when someone does that. But I was speaking to someone a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. who's like a writer rather than the poetry writer, and they were saying they really hate it when they see performance poems who've memorised it, because they feel like they say, and like, this is, I completely disagree, but I'd like to hit to, I don't know, get sort of a more professional opinion. They were saying like, it's like they, someone comes on stage and they just got like this blank, and they just kind of roll it off, and they're not taking in like the audience or anything. Like, they think that if they're reading it, that they can kind of react and do it slower or something, but I don't know, I think if someone's memorised it, it's like they're kind of really inhabiting it. But
yeah, I think probably the opposite of that person, because I think if you read something, I mean, I know there are a lot of poets I know who are really good, who do get up and read and they make it work for them, you know, which is fine. But then you get people who obviously stare at the page, and I'm not sure for me if reading would work, because I like to perform it, and for me the better I know something, the more confident I am with it, and then, you know, I can get into the performance, because it is a performance, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's not just the words. Obviously, the words are important. They're why we're all here. But not everyone is good at performing. You'll get some people that just do it on autopilot. But I don't think that's an effect of learning it off by heart. I think that's just, it just depends on the person and the poem and, you know, and also how nervous they are. But yeah, for me, I always prefer to perform it. And I've got up a couple of times with a poem that I didn't know well enough, and but I wanted to do because I was new, it was new, I was excited about it. And then I'd just kind of get too nervous about the words and be kind of looking at the pages and rustling and just, for me, yeah, I just prefer to perform it, definitely. And I like it when other people perform it. And I think then you kind of, once you've got the learning the words and knowing what you're saying out of the way, you can kind of take it in different directions, and you can be a bit like an actor who's like taking a script and then pushing it on and kind of, you know, actioning the text, to use like stupid actor phrase. I don't know why I'm doing that, I'm not an actor, but you know.
No, I see that, yeah, that makes sense to me, because it's like, I don't know, do you feel like, you know, with some poems that you may maybe done quite a few times, do you sort of feel like the performance is slightly different each time, or...?
Yeah, I think you kind of, because you get new ideas just of kind of, actually, if I pause here, it will, people will get more out of that line because they have time to digest it. Or sometimes, you know, maybe you want to do stuff with body language. Like I went to Glam Slam this summer, which had quite a largely gay audience, and it was in different heats. And in the first heat, the guy that won got naked, and his poem was great. Like it was part of the poem, and it worked, and it was excellent. But I kind of won in my heat, so I went into the next one, but then not into the kind of final. But I was thinking, okay, he's got naked, what am I gonna do? And I thought, well, this audience are not gonna appreciate me naked all that much, and plus I don't want to just try and copy what he did. But all I thought I could do was just try and really kind of inhabit the poem in my body language. So I was kind of, you know, I was like getting down on my knees and sort of moving around and kind of fake stripping, but not really. And just kind of like giving a lot of actions to it, which I wouldn't normally do, but it kind of worked in that context. And it's quite fun to be able to do that and I think try different things.
How long have you been performing?
I've been, my first performance was probably about a year ago. That was at Poetry Unplugged. But then I went away. No, I did like 2-3 performances last summer, and then I was kind of away for a few months, came back in May, and then since then I've been performing, well, almost every week. Like, you know, first of all, obviously at open mics and slams and stuff, and then now I'm starting to do feature sets. So yeah, kind of a year, but really just a few months of actually doing it.
No, it sounds like pretty good progress, I think, if you want to see it that way, not that it's about kind of like... But I was going to say, so have you been writing for, I assume, longer than that?
Yeah, I mean, I've loved writing since I was little, and I've always written stuff, and I wrote poems when I was a teenager, like a lot of people do at that age, and I've carried on. I mean, I've always written poetry, but most of it I would never perform, and it's not really that sort of stuff, and a lot of it's not very good, you know? And I started going to poetry events maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago. And I first started going to Poetry at Cafe. And then and I was thinking, could I do this? But then I thought, well, my poems are so different, and they don't really have that impact standing up, and what can I do? And then I started writing poems to perform. And it was great, because I kind of didn't think I'd be able to do it. Or I thought, oh no, that's not my style, I can't do that sort of writing. And then, you know, the more you see, the more inspired you are, and you figure out what works and what doesn't. And I just love it. I love it so much. I think it's very different. Mm-hmm. Page poetry is obviously great as well. And I've been to some poetry nights where they're kind of less performancey. Like, say, it's kind of a book launch in a bookshop, and someone will get up and read poems, and they've published a book of poems. And sometimes it's something maybe I've flicked through beforehand and thought, oh wow, they're really great. But when they stand up and perform it, it doesn't have that sort of alive feeling that a lot of performance poetry does. And it's not that one's better than the other, it's just this works really well on the page and this works really well as a performance. And I think a lot of the stuff I write, I can't really imagine, would it work on the page? I don't really know. This one is kind of a love poem. It's called Toothpaste. This is probably one of my favourite of my own poems, if I can say that without sounding really wanky, I don't know.
That's not, you can say it's like your signatures. I don't know. Do you feel like you've got themes or a particular...
I suppose. I mean, this is one that I would do at a gig and feel confident about. And I wrote this maybe about 6 months ago. And it was about a guy that I met travelling, and it was all very kind of passionate and stuff. And then it obviously went wrong, as things do, and then I came home and wrote this. But now I've performed it loads, so I'm quite comfortable with that. And now I've said that, I'll probably mess it up, but, you know.
It's fine, no one will ever know.
In theory, yep. Okay, this is called Toothpaste. Do you remember that time you let me brush your teeth? We stumbled in sideways, silly as monkeys. We'd had too much to drink, to smoke, to eat. Tired, but still horny, I wanted you, but still knew the importance of dental hygiene. So as you stood, half our clothes on the floor already, I made you a non-sweet toothpaste present and came at you with the oral B. You stood, arms out like a theatrical child, getting dried off at bath time, wrinkling your nose as I sunk my pink stick into your cavity and traversed my way along your ivory coast. Just when I thought I knew your mouth back to back, I was staring at these bone-white TV ab bad boys, scrubbing them, whipping up a satisfying friction, watching foam glisten against your brown skin, sloshing my paste around your gums with intent to brighten up your smile and leave you squeaky clean. I'm not a dentophile, but I have to confess that in a funny way, yeah, it was better than sex. And all those things we shared, all the little trespasses into the mundane secrets of each other's bodies, got caught up and pinned down and stretched out inside my head and came out, having achieved a higher significance. You washed my hair in the shower. I popped all the pimples on your back. You held my nose for 20 seconds because you farted in bed. I know it sounds dumb, but I liked that. One night I threw up worms, you'd still give me a kiss, and I'd think, that's what love is. That's what love is. That's what love is, I said to myself, but it's kind of a shame you were fucking someone else. I should have known. By the Hollywood smile, you were so out of my league, I felt like I was drowning, but I made believe. And when you opened wide, I lapped up every pearly white line, I thought it was all subjective. That's why I could never tell you you were hot. I hoped you wouldn't notice. Though it was plain as Jane to see you could do better than me, I tried to trick reality by keeping it inside of me, but secretly, I pinned you on my wall. I built statues in your name. But the pedestal I put you on just kept you away, and I can't blame you for that. The fact is, you knew you'd find a better girl. And now she's no longer hypothetical. So what could I do? I had to spit you out. I had to rinse the bad taste out of my mouth, pull off the proverbial plaster, and let my wounds heal out in the open air. But all those entry points, the places where I let you in, turned into internal scarring because you got under my skin and I can't win with you. And now my eyes are green, but it's spread to my limbs too. I'll have to amputate a leg to cure myself of you, but when I'm through, I'll be all new and strong and serene, with a mind that's minty fresh and a heart that's squeaky clean. I'll turn you out like a light. I'll say goodnight to my grief, and next time, I'll look for someone with a beautiful heart and bad teeth.
Oh, thanks. I was hoping you'd do that one, because I looked at your MySpace page, which we should tell people about, by the
okay,
way.
Okay, yeah. It's myspace.com/AmyAcre. This next one I'm going to do is about, it's about a certain kind of friendship between girls. It's often a kind of friendship that you have maybe when you're, you know, quite young in your teenage years, or you know, not necessarily just that. But I suppose it's one that's a little bit kind of fraught with tension or rivalry. And I did this, I performed this while I was travelling. I spent a few days at an ashram in India, which was quite a strange experience. You know, when they do all the kind of meditation and yoga and stuff. And they had a talent show. And it was just not what I was expecting at all while I was there. And they were looking for people to do it, to do stuff. And I was thinking, oh God, I'm going to have to do a poem, aren't I? Because now I've kind of had this mindset that if there's an opportunity for me to perform a poem, then I have to do it just for my own sort of practice and learning experience and all of that. So I did this poem at the ashram. And it, like, it went down quite well. It was quite nice, but it was just funny because it was such a sort of unexpected scenario.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Sort of combination of worlds. All right, so I will, I'll just go into it. You say you feel sorry for him. Because it's just too something. Too big. Too much. Too masculine. The jock jaw clashing with the geek within. The long lost eyes and the cliched chin. You don't want him. It's embarrassing. The way he follows you around like a pet you regret picking up from the pound. You kind of wish you could put him down, but it's too late. You've got him now. He turns up like the wrong bus is always coming round, like those keys you found while looking for something else. He pops up everywhere. It's no surprise when he's there. It's no turn up for the books. But there he is again with that lovelorn look always getting in your way, and you say you feel sorry for him. Because you never meant to lead him on. It's not your fault, you're so fucking fantastic. Men just fall beneath your feet, like falling beneath the wheels of some unstoppable steamroller in heels. You crush, they feel flattened. But you're flattered, you say you feel sorry for him. Because you left him all alone at that party. You felt so guilty while you were off talking to the DJ and he was stuck there talking to me. And what a drag it must have been. Trying to rush that time by while I silence butterflies. Remind him of my name. And don't let him suspect for a moment that this moment might just be the only reason I came. I stand loose-hipped, red-lipped, party dress, 4 pints, total mess. We laugh and for a second I am funny, sexy, socially successful, stress-free, pretty, just the best me that I can be. And then you rescue me. You take me aside and you tell me you feel sorry for him. Because you just kissed that guy in the corridor, you know, the one I was talking to before, and he couldn't keep his eyes off you. And while you were off, being wild and free, your poor love had no choice but talking to me, and he was obviously trying to inspire jealousy in you. But unfortunately, it just wasn't to be. You see right through him, you see, and you say you admire me. You admire me. With my steel-backed nerves, my real woman curves and my great fucking personality, you say it's a tragedy no one else sees what you see because you think I'm great. That's why you're always defending me to your mates, to the end, to that man you call a friend who's watching you with silent plea. And I can't pretend that I don't see the truth, neither you nor I can bend, that he loves you. Not me. And you say it's time to jet. You're halfway out the door, but then you stop for one last cigarette before you say goodnight. Wait in the corridor, ask him for a light. And it's no accident the way you let the smoke billow around you like you're on a movie set. Like a black and white starlet as you play with his lighter so theatrically. But in this movie, there can only be one heroine. And you always fight harder. You always hold tighter, so I always let you win. It just seems right because I see the pain you hide. I know where you've been. I even see you see yourself and it kills me deep inside, but this is how we've always been, you and I, and it's all right. But please, don't admire me. Don't be my champion tonight. Don't tell me I'm a fighter because I don't need your advice. Just strike a match against your mouth to light the way that you came in, because when you're gone, that's when my flame burns brighter. When you leave, my story can begin.
So thank you very much to Amy Aker for coming in and sharing some of her poems with us. Definitely check out her MySpace because there's all sorts of things in there that you wouldn't have heard on our lovely podcast. It's myspace.com/AmyAker. And yeah, next week we've got some more podcasts planned, or well, one. I'm going to be mysterious about that one and not tell you who it is until it happens, but it's all good.